Well, welcome to worship once again. Nice to have all of you join us for our online service today. And I have to, I just have to show off my new t-shirt that the staff gave me this past week at our staff meeting. So I hope you can read this, but it says retired pastors make the best grandpas. So I just love this shirt and had to wear it and show it to everybody today. As many of you know, I became a grandpa on Monday. So I'm pretty excited. I think I'm walking about 2 or 3 feet above the ground at this point. So anyway, I wanted to share my shirt today. But it's good to be with you today. So I don't know which is worse, to have so much knowledge that you come across as arrogant, or too little knowledge so that you come across as dense. A guy made his first visit to Yellowstone National Park. And he asked his guide, he says, "Man, look at all those big rocks. Wherever did they come from?" "Well, the glaciers brought them down," said the guide. "But where are the glaciers?" asked the persistent tourist. "The glaciers," said the guide in a weary voice, "have gone back for more rocks." A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, it has been said. But what about a little ignorance? An IT specialist working in the central office of a large bank receives calls from employees in the field having problems with their computers. Now, since their computers are connected to a central server, he's usually able to help them online, you know, over the phone, whatever. One night, he got a call from a woman in one of the branch banks who had this question. She said, "I've got smoke coming from the back of my terminal." And then she added, "Do you guys have a fire downtown?" Well, I guess that makes sense. If they get their information via phone lines from downtown, why couldn't they also get smoke? Well, which is more dangerous, a little knowledge or a little ignorance? Some of you are familiar with Judge Judy on television. As presiding jurist on national television, Judge Judy draws more than 10 million viewers to her show. Now, Judge Judy is not one to accept ignorance as a defense. Judge Judy remembers advice given by her father, which became the title of her best-selling book. I love the title. The title is "Beauty Fades, Dumb is Forever." He told her that a bright intellect, a curious mind, and a passion for learning were priceless commodities. "I always thought the worst insult in the world was to be called stupid," she says. Well, as Judge Judy became a lawyer and then a judge, she saw what happened to people who didn't use their heads. The fallout of their stupid decisions was the daily parade of misery that marched through family court, says Judge Judy. "I've heard it all before. I didn't think. I didn't mean to. Ignorance of life is not an excuse in my courtroom," she says. I think she's saying that a little ignorance is maybe worse than a little knowledge. Dr. George Gallup, responding to the request of the Dallas Times Herald, did a survey of students' knowledge in 8 industrialized countries. Those currently in school in the U.S. ranked either at the bottom or near the bottom of the list in mathematics, science, and geography. Here are some examples. Only 1/5 of the students tested could even locate the United States on a map. 1/3 of the teens did not know that Mexico is the country that borders on Texas. 25% were unaware that New Jersey is on the East Coast and that Oregon is on the West Coast. Only about 40% could name California as the most populous state. Gallup found that these aspiring high school graduates were woefully ignorant in 3 major fields: trade, travel, and culture. Their answers to 3 questions illustrate this. What nation in the world has the largest population? The majority of the students answered the United Nations. were the least two states admitted to the Union, was the next question. The majority of answers included Florida, Mexico, and Canada. What language is most widely spoken in Latin America? The common response was Latin. So, is it better to be knowledgeable and arrogant, or lacking in knowledge and be taken for stupid? Well, hopefully, these aren't the only two choices, but I do like those bumper stickers that say, "You think education is expensive? Try ignorance." Now, I ask this question because of something the Apostle Paul says in our lesson from 1 Corinthians. He says, "Knowledge puffs up," says Paul, "but love builds up." It's true. Knowledge can puff us up. There are people in our society who disdain anyone who is not as well educated as they are. For example, they turn up their noses at anyone who is not precise in their use of grammar. They regard anyone as stupid who is not as well read or as sophisticated. Many of these folks are not only elitist in their cultural preferences, but also in their politics, in their social relationships, and even, yes, their religion. St. Paul encountered people like that in the early church. Christianity had become a very liberating force in the lives of the earliest followers of Jesus. Most had been drawn from the Jewish faith. They had once lived under the law with the burden of the legalisms of the day. But Christ had set them free from all of that, and they were proud of their newfound freedom, and they flaunted it. Paul could understand that. He himself wrote eloquently about the freedom that Christ gives us. But Paul had a higher vision and an even more tender heart. He knew that freedom had a double edge. Many of the more recent converts to Christianity had been worshiping idols before they came to Christ. And part of their worship involved sacrificing food to the idols. Now, afterwards, they would feast on that food. This was a social event as well as a religious duty. So the question was, should they continue to patronize these feast events after giving their hearts to Christ? Certainly, said some. After all, idols are an illusion. There is no reality to them. But the food and the fellowship are still good. What possible harm could it do for them to continue participating in the social part of these events, even though they were now followers of Christ? Well, Paul saw the possibility of a great deal of harm. What if a new believer, still insecure in their faith, saw them eating food offered to idols and thought they still believed in idol worship even after becoming Christians? Then these newer believers might fall back into worshiping idols themselves. So, says St. Paul to the Christians at the church in Corinth, "Don't let your superior understanding of faith cause you to be a stumbling block to others. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up." Christians are people who build others up. It is not our intellect that identifies us as followers of Christ, but the love that's in our heart. This does not mean that a Christian needs to park his or her brain at the door. Just the opposite is true. God gives us our good minds. God intends for us to use those minds to the fullest extent possible. What it means is that the highest use of our intellect is to find a way to build up other people. As we have noted before, Jesus was an encourager. He lifted people up. He didn't put them down. He never put people down. And that is our task as well, to lift people up. One of the primary functions we have when we travel, you know, to our ministry partners in Haiti or Guatemala or India or Mexico or Uganda or El Salvador is to build up our brothers and sisters, to encourage them in their journey of faith. it is not enough that we do not hate people or that we do them no harm. We are to be sensitive to the needs of others and find ways to do good for them. In the book Letters to Philip by Charlie Shedd, we read of a woman who suffered a car accident. She called her husband as soon as she could and to tell him about the accident. Seemingly oblivious to her condition, he asked, "How much damage did you do to the car?" His second words were, "Whose fault was it?" Following this, he suggested, "Listen, dear, don't admit anything. You call the insurance company and I'll call the lawyer. We can beat this thing." His wife said little until this point. Then she asked, "Well, do you have any more instructions or questions?" "No," he said, "I think that about covers it." "Oh, does it?" she fumed. "In case you're interested, I'm in the hospital with 5 broken ribs." Now, certainly that couldn't be any husbands in our congregation who would be like that. Christians are people who build people up. Christians are people who are sensitive to the needs of others and seek to lift them to a higher plane of light and life. Christians are people who recognize that everyone needs encouragement in order to be all that they can be. I like the story of a woman who brought her new baby to the office. I'm kind of thinking about babies these days. Brought her new baby to the office, and she also had her 7-year-old son with her. Everyone gathered around the baby, and the little boy asked, "Mommy, can I have some money to buy a soda?" "What do you say?" she asked. Now, everyone expected him to say, "Please, may I have some money to buy a soda?" What he said was this, "Mommy, you're so thin and beautiful." The woman reached into her purse and gave her son the money. We all need encouragement, don't we? And so do the people we live with, the people we work with, the people we meet every day. We all need this important gift of light and life. My great prayer for grace is that we will continue to be an encouraging church. Little people tear others down. Little people abuse others and take advantage of them. I pray that as a congregation, we will resolve to be a place where people find positive affirmations and abundant life and light every day. Eric, the swimmer, Musambani of Equatorial Guinea, was an unlikely hero of the Sydney Olympic Games. The 22-year-old African had only learned to swim the January before. He had only practiced in a 20-meter pool without lane markers and had never raced more than 50 meters. By special invitation of the International Olympic Committee, under a special program that permits poorer countries to participate, even though their athletes don't meet, kind of customary standards, well, he had been entered in the 100-meter men's freestyle. When the other two swimmers in his heat were disqualified because of false starts, Musambani was forced to swim alone. Eric Musambani was, to use the words of an Associated Press story about his race, charmingly inept. He never put his head under the water's surface and flailed wildly to stay afloat. And then with 10 meters left to the wall, he virtually came to a stop. Some spectators thought he might drown. Even though his time was over a minute slower than what he would need to qualify for the next level of competition, the capacity crowd at the Olympic Aquatic Center stood to their feet and cheered Eric on. After what seemed like an eternity, this young African athlete reached the wall and hung on for dear life. When he had caught his breath and regained his composure, the French-speaking Musambani said through an interpreter, "I want to send hugs and kisses to the crowd. It was their cheering that kept me going." I like that. It was the cheering of the crowd that kept him going. Wouldn't it be great if our young people could say late in life that it was the cheering of Grace Lutheran Church that kept me going. Wouldn't it be great if a person who's been through a terrible illness could report later, it was the cheering of Grace Lutheran Church that kept me going? And as I come to the end of my term as your pastor, I can say in all humility, it was the cheering of you, my sisters and brothers in Christ, that kept me going. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. We have many smart, well-educated, brilliant people in our congregation, and we're thankful for them. Knowledge is much to be preferred over ignorance, but that will not make us a great church. What makes us a great church is when we are a church of encouragers, a congregation of abundant light and life, who build one another up with the love of Christ. Please continue to do that. Amen.